Manipulation of the mind, emotions, and physical health of people through new applied technologies continues to draw the attention of military planners around the world. Best-selling author, lecturer Dr. Nick Begich. Tonight on Coast to Coast, we'll talk about some most startling advances in this area of technology for military and private sector uses. Mind control in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Nick Begich is the eldest son of the late United States Congressman from Alaska, Nick Begich Sr., who died in a plane crash in Alaska, and political activist Peggy Begich. He is well-known in Alaska for his own political activities as well. He has twice been elected president of both the Alaska Federation of Teachers and the Anchorage Council of Education. He has been pursuing independent research in the sciences and politics for most of his adult life. Begich received his doctorate in traditional medicine from the Open International University for Complementary Medicines in November of 1994. He is the editor of Earth Pulse Flashpoints, a new science book series. Begich has served as an expert witness and speaker before the European Parliament and has spoken on various issues for groups representing citizen concerns, statesmen and elected officials, scientists, and others. He's a regular contributing guest here on Coast to Coast AM. And Nick, what is an expert in HAARP now doing looking into mind control?
Well, you know, this is, from my perspective, perhaps one of the biggest issues. You know, the whole area of new technologies, which, you know, HAARP was really our first big foray into, you know, bringing issues of that were important technologically to the public. And as part of that, you know, one of the issues with HAARP was the ability of this system, because of its generation of extremely low frequency signals, to actually interfere with human brain performance, something that we've talked about on the program in the past. And when we began to look at this issue and then began to collect what we considered initially just sort of ancillary materials, we began to see a trend. And this trend in the last, well, the last 11 years, we put together approximately 300 source documents, most of them military records and academic studies, showing sort of the trail of this technology. And right now, major and significant initiatives to try and develop tools and resources for military applications in this area.
Now, when we talk about mind control, exactly what are we talking about?
Well, there's a couple different ways to look at it. You know, there's certainly the darker side of it, which, you know, we're going to cover some of that tonight. And then there's the brighter side of it, you know, how some of this technology might be used to enhance human performance for the opposite end of the spectrum. But on this particular issue of mind control, what we're talking about is being able to artificially influence or direct or control activities within an individual or group of human brains. And the idea of manipulating behavior, the idea of manipulating emotions, all of these kinds of things show up in the literature. And again, the big concern that I have is looking at when is it right to use technologies, and when is it absolutely wrong to use technologies? And in this particular area and areas related to the impact on humanity of technologies, that's really the focus of our work over the next, what we see as a foreseeable future, for sure the next 4 or 5 years. We're pretty much committed to this issue and the related issues because we think it's the most invasive technology on the planet today, and being contemplated for uses that most, I think most rational people would strongly disagree with.
Nick, has this been going on for a long time, the issue of mind control?
Oh, absolutely. If you go back, in fact, let's kind of talk a little bit about, you know, sort of where all this started. You know, if you go way back, you have to go back to the Korean conflict, and the returning prisoners of war from the Korean conflict displayed very bizarre behaviors, total personality changes, ideological changes, big changes in these folks. And so after the war, we began to look at this, and the phrase brainwashing was actually coined back then in the early 50s. This then became kind of an interest area for our intelligence community in the United States because it was obvious that it was profound in its impact. So a lot of work was done through the 50s into the 60s. Eventually, in the early 70s, much of that was disclosed in congressional inquiries surrounding the MK Ultra project and the rest of the projects surrounding that cluster. And these were the use primarily of chemical agents, LSD and hallucinogenics, and the like, that were used on American service personnel, on other disadvantaged individuals and people around the country as experimental guinea pigs, and they got caught.
Nick, did the former Soviet Union have anything to do with our push to get into this field?
Absolutely. In fact, the understanding of sort of how to affect the brain, if you go back even further, you know, back sort of before the 70s, you go back into the early part of the Vietnam conflict. In the 60s, middle 60s, we captured a device that was a Soviet device called the LIDA machine, L-I-D-A is how it's spelled, and it was a Soviet a device that was used for putting prisoners of war into trance-like states for extracting intelligence, and it used light and flickering light and sound and electromagnetic fields is what has been reported to do that. And this is an area that really did not make much noise when MK Ultra was revealed. It was mainly the chemical side, but the Russians were long before we were engaged, at least in the public record, very interested in these issues and had been pursuing them. In fact, in the late 60s, many will remember the microwave bombardment of the U.S. Embassy.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Some said, hey, that was all about surveillance. Today, when we look back on what was happening and analyze what was happening, it was most likely trying to affect emotional states of people within the embassy by using pulsed microwave signals for disrupting brain function. And this is something that's been experimentally demonstrated as possible within laboratory environments.
We have, and as we open up the phone lines later on tonight, Nikki, we may get some calls from people who believe that they are being bombarded with these kinds of signals, and not only from maybe their neighbors, but some other kinds of government sources.
Well, you know, we hear from folks all the time, and you know, and you know, in the last couple of years, you know, we have been to become very concerned about the misapplication of technology, and you know, and that concern, because of what can happen, is really, I think, probably the most important technical issue out there. You know, would they do this? Could they do this? The answers to all those questions are yes, they can. Yes, they would. When you look at victims of human experimentation in the United States, over 500,000 Americans, according to Secretary of Energy O'Leary, when she was in that position of the Clinton administration, were victims of non-consensual experiments over a 40-year period that involved everything from the MK Ultra projects of mind control to injecting black Americans in the Southeast with syphilis to see how they would die over their lifetimes. The idea that 500,000 Americans have been victimized in this way, the idea that perhaps there are victims of this technology, I absolutely believe there are. We hear from a great number of people and have over the years. It's tough for us to sort out, you know, which ones are potentially victims of this type of technology and which ones might have other issues going on. But we see certain patterns emerge. And, you know, when you look at the history of this country, and in the acknowledgement of experiments in this area already, there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that this type of technology is being used in this way. And the sad story is it's a very difficult one to detect when you look at what kinds of ways they can deliver on this promise of being able to manipulate human behavior in this way.
You know, in the past, other than this Russian machine, this LIDA machine, I would have assumed that our push for mind control then was based primarily on hypnosis and some other non-technological ways.
Sure. The idea of hypnosis, putting the mind in a highly suggestive state so that you can, you know, manipulate behavior, you know, that's certainly there. That's been around a long time. You know, people have said, oh, you can't really make someone do something they don't want to do, but you can create illusions that actually create exactly those outcomes, things that people really didn't plan on doing. The other thing, though, that goes much further is the idea of the brain being able to be manipulated by external fields. This is an area of extensive research by military planners. In fact, you know, when you look at at the whole direction that they've intended to go with this. It's really about command and control capabilities of the military. We used to think about that as, controlling, equipment and hardware and bombs and bullets. One of the most recent articles that I've read on this issue came out of the Air Force Research Laboratory's Technology Horizons, which is a publication they put out monthly. This particular article was put together by the Directorate dealing with electromagnetic weapon systems, and this is what they're predicting is possible in the upcoming years. And this is what it says, and I quote, "By studying and modeling the human brain and the nervous system, the ability to mentally influence or confuse personnel is also possible. Through sensory deception, it may be possible to create synthetic images or holograms to confuse an individual's visual sense, or in a similar manner, confuse his senses of sound, taste, touch, or smell. In other words, to interfere with the normal way the brain interprets its external reality and be able to synthesize that, to create it artificially." And when you think about that, there may be some interesting applications, but when you consider sort of the military's drive to this is to control the ultimate operator of hardware, which is the human being, to be able to influence human beings and not destroy hardware in the process is what part of what controlled effects is all about. This article, titled by that name, actually talks about using technology for impacting, for instance, the things operating within a weapon system, the computer guidance systems, being able to interfere with those on one level using energy, and then on another level being able to actually melt circuits or destroy circuits, and then on another level being able to manipulate those people that are actually controlling those circuits. And ultimately, that's what it's about. It's about controlling the battlefield environment and controlling the combatants that you're facing within the battlefield that this technology is advancing along those lines.
The Israelis have a device which they're using now to control crowds.
Yeah.
And we have this too. And I'm not sure who developed it first, quite frankly. We may have. But it's that sound machine that literally brings people down to their knees and makes them nauseous. They can't do whatever they're supposed to do in a violent or nonviolent demonstration.
Right.
Is that a form of mind control, Nick?
It's more you're really affecting the physical body in that instance. I mean, certainly you create terror in those instances as well. I mean, the latest one of the U.S. military is the one that creates the heat on the surface of the skin using a pulsed microwave. And this creates a sensation of about 130 degrees on the surface of the skin, like you're on fire. And certainly that's going to create significant, emotional distress. The idea of using a pulsed microwave is kind of interesting to me, because by changing the frequency, the pulse rate, the waveform, or any number of factors, you can affect much different things. In fact, you can use that very same system for impacting emotional states of individuals, and the research exists to demonstrate it. The sad story is that when you introduce these new technologies, not usually the whole story is told. You have to have an answer for what you're bringing into the battlefield. Using sound for creating feelings of nauseous or flu-like symptoms is something that has been demonstrated in weapons applications. When you look at the development of pulse microwave signals for affecting the human body, not just the brain, but every organ of the body, the Air Force contracted with the University of Utah and produced what was called the Radio Frequency Dosimetry Handbook, which is sort of the dosages of radio frequency necessary to override the lungs, the liver, the heart, or even the brain of an individual and to affect them. And the part of that that was public, that wasn't classified, is pretty telling in terms of the direction in which the research is headed. And, when you go back to the mid-80s, there was a lot of interest because they had discovered that you could influence externally people's behavior in pretty profound ways. And the idea of using this as in weapons applications became really a major effort of the U.S. military. At the same time, within the classification of what are called non-lethal weapons, and these are technologies that don't necessarily kill, but can have debilitating or devastating effect. The thing about non-lethal weapons development in the United States today is you get priority funding if you have dual use, if you can be used for Department of Defense or DOD applications, and if you can use the same technology for domestic applications for crowd control, riot control purposes and the like.
Is that why they're developing mind control devices, Nick, and capabilities? Is it all for a bigger picture? And we're going to get into after the break this dark side of all this. But basically, what's the purpose? What's the reason?
I think it's all about control, you know, and I think this is again where, you know, technologies today are capable of changing the very face of the planet. You know, in the last couple of years, we have been given the privilege of serving on a foundation that's set up explicitly to develop dialogue with the public and educate the public on technology issues such as these. And it's the Lay Foundation, Lay Institute on Technologies, and it was set up in Dallas, Texas by Dorothy Lay. Primarily to do research into these areas and make sure that we have an opportunity to bring these issues forward to the public in a way that creates a good discussion and knowledge of how these technologies can be used and how they are being used in ways that can negatively impact. So when you talk about victims of this type of technology, at some level, everyone in the country becomes a victim of the technology that we develop if we don't develop it wisely.
I remember a movie, Nick, where a company developed computer software, and they would sell it worldwide, but something in the software, when you were looking at your computer, kind of like hypnotized you or controlled your mind.
Right.
Is it conceivable that that is what's going on now, where they're trying to control everybody and we don't even know it?
I think that's a very strong possibility, and I'll tell you, the you know, the idea of utilizing other transmission systems using computer systems, the Soviets discovered what's called the 25th frame effect, where every 25th frame they can flash something in front of you that will definitely register with the subconscious and create changes.
Just one frame, boom. Right.
Yeah. And now the other thing that has happened is there was an article published in a Russian military journal called Orienteer. It was later reprinted and translated into English in the U.S. Army War College's Perimeters. And the article was called, in the U.S. version, "The Mind Has No Firewalls." And within that article, they discussed a number of different ways to affect human behavior using these kinds of systems. And what they say in the context of that is pretty telling. In fact, I've got a short quote. I'm going to try and dig it out here while we're talking.
Okay.
And this is what it said in the paper. It said, "A psychotronic generator which produces a powerful electromagnetic emanation capable of being sent through telephone lines, TV, radio networks, supply pipes, and incandescent lamps. This signal would manipulate the behavior of those in contact with the signal." In other words, anyone around the power grid, the telephone system, or the internet for that matter. And when you look at that and you think about it, I mean, we're all in that grid, if you will. I mean, because everything around us, you know, carries energy. The thing is you can put on those carriers that will carry a signal in that will have a much different effect than just powering your light bulbs in your house. And this is exactly what the Russians had discovered years ago and openly disclose in what's considered public literature.
Is it conceivable that this is being done through a black ops budget, that there's a group within government that knows what's going on, and that the higher-ups might not even know what's happening?
That's not only possible, but is more probable the fact of the matter. You know, I come from a political background, as you mentioned in the introductions, and you know, people have this illusion that political leaders are all-knowing, and they're not, you know, in terms of what goes on within government, especially at the federal level. You know, governments are run more by bureaucracies than they are by political leadership at many levels. And so what you see is the development of these kinds of programs existing from administration to administration because they are buried deeply within the institutions. And the only time that they come into public view is under those extraordinary circumstances where people would most likely make the judgment to use them. In other words, people working on these programs don't just bring them out. I mean, they identify a certain amount early on. And in fact, in the book Earth Rising, the Revolution, we define in one chapter over 100 sources showing the evolution of the technology. And then all of a sudden you see these lines of research all of a sudden go black, where no longer do you see them mentioned in the open literature. You see them in some academic circles, but not in the military literature. And that's when the funding sort of shifts over and other agencies pick it up, and you're not getting it into the is developed enough to where they really don't want the public involved. And when you talk about political control utilizing this kind of technology, you know, there's a very good book that I recommend to folks is Between Two Ages by Brzezinski, which was written back in the 70s. And technology was the focus of that particular book and its impact on the future. And if you read it today, it reads as a history. And I think it tells a lot. And I think after the break, we can kind of talk about, you know, what
okay,
he said.
Okay, we'll do that. And I really want to also get into the dark side of these technologies and how they can maybe even affect elections, steer us in direction. Maybe can you affect millions of people at one time? Back in a moment with our guest, Nick Begich on Coast to Coast AM. Mind Control tonight on Coast to Coast. Nick Begich, our guest. Earthpulse.com is his website, which is linked up right now to Coast to Coast AM. com. And welcome back. Nick Begich, our guest. I'm George Norrie. You know, Nick, you're talking about the book by Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Right.
And I always thought he was part of the Illuminati.
Well, you know, he was one of the founders of the
Trilateral Commission.
Yeah.
That's right.
With, I believe it was with, now I forget his name. He was in the Nixon administration.
Henry?
Yeah, with Henry Kissinger.
That's
and,
right.
You know, I think when you look at Zbigniew Brzezinski as sort of a forward thinker, kind of predicting what's going to happen, whether... You know, you read his text as a forecast or a prediction or a roadmap, which I think is probably more accurate.
He might have been in on the know, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the people lay out, their plan for, you know, how they want to develop political and social systems. And this issue of using technology to further that end was sort of the center point of Zbigniew's work. And he writes in kind of a convoluted style. This is before he became a national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, but when you go back and you read the material, there was one particular section in it that was startling to me, and it's on page 56 and 57, and it's the section that deals with this idea of physical control of the mind, the idea of being able to develop technologies that would influence human behavior in a way that would be quite devastating. In fact, it was that particular article that we quoted, or that book section we quoted in our very first work on HARP, because back in those days, they had made the assertion that if we could ever figure out how to electronically stroke the ionosphere in just the right way, that we could return a signal to the Earth in the ELF range that would affect human emotional states over large geographic areas. And this was the area of HARP that sort of crosses over into this issue of mind control, because we know absolutely, that ELF signals, extremely low frequency signals, when directed and developed in certain ways, can influence behavior. And the way this happens is through a process called brain entrainment, where the brain actually locks onto these external signals, begins to mirror those signals in a way that they can't be resisted. It's just a natural phenomena. What will naturally happen? You can utilize flickering light for creating that effect. You can use binaural beat, which is generated by sound signals going in both ears, one coming in at one frequency and one at the other, and they create sort of a cancellation effect, which leaves a beat frequency in this ELF range, because a human ear can't hear in the ELF range. We can't hear that low of a frequency. So they create this method for doing that. The brain locks onto that signal, begins to entrain, and then all of the normal reactions that would occur with that brain state then do occur. You know, we were able to take a look at, you know, sort of what else was out there, you know, along this line. And when you look at the military's own words on the subject matter, there was a document, Low Intensity Conflict and Modern Technology, produced by Maxwell Air Force Base in 1984. And that particular document talks about the ability to override the brain using light, using sound, using electromagnetic fields. Much later than that, in 1999, February 7th, a show called Undercurrents in Canada, which is on their public broadcasting, one of the highest rated public broadcasting programs in Canada, they featured a story on mind control, and they brought in Persinger from Laurentian University, who was able to demonstrate the ability to create illusions using electromagnetic fields, the ability to change emotional states using electromagnetic fields, even creating out-of-body experiences, creating the abduction experiences, utilizing just external fields to manipulate what was going on within the brains of individuals.
Now, you don't think that's part of an experiment, Nick, do you? I mean, so many people, millions of people, believe they've been abducted. Some may have been, but quite frankly, do you think it's possible that there have been experiments on these people?
I think that's a possibility, absolutely. In many of these instances, I would not say all of these instances, but many. And the reason I think that that experimentation is possible and likely is at Laurentian University, Persinger did work for the Central Intelligence Agency and to do some projects for them.
And they think that maybe they're seeing aliens where they're being basically mind controlled to think they're seeing aliens when really they're human beings, maybe.
Well, in this case, it was stimulating the brain in a way that created that experience, yet they never left the chair. And there was never any, you know, visual images brought into them or anything like this.
Okay.
It was done just by stimulating the brain artificially using electromagnetic fields. Then he demonstrated this technique on Undercurrents. He also talked about, when you talk about a wide range of people being affected, what he suggested is that, as an example he gave, with what he had developed, is you could create a very complex signal on a radio broadcast that created a sensation of high anxiety and stress in the population. And then what he suggested you could do is go on the air, say on the nightly news, and indict an ethnic group as an example, the example he gave. And what would happen is people would turn all that anxiety and tension and anger towards that target. And so, you know, using it just in that way, which he felt would be quite simple to administer, to actually lay out and do, whether you were directly working with the radio stations or not, you could embed a signal in a way that would be carried on their broadcasts, and you could affect that. You know, that whole concept, you know, when you stop and think about it, the idea that people could actually accomplish this, and there's no regulation. I mean, there's nothing that would prevent someone from doing this, either an individual or a government. And that, again, is where the big concerns come up. You know, the crossover on HAARP on this issue, when we took HAARP into the European Parliament and addressed that issue, we also took the issue of mind control, although we didn't characterize it in those words. And what we ended up with was a resolution. It's resolution A40005/99. Section 27 of that resolution, the first three sections above it deal with HAARP, but the last section calls for an international convention introducing a global ban on all developments and deployments of weapons which might enable any form of manipulation of human beings. Now, we convinced the European Parliament that the technology existed by giving them almost 3 feet of unclassified documents that proved it. And then we demonstrated an infrasound device, an actual device, in a pre-hearing conference with the committee and a couple members of the European media, where we showed how infrasound, how voice information, such as what people are hearing on the radio tonight, mm-hmm. can be transferred directly through the nervous system of the human body and be perceived in the head as that proverbial voice in the head. And when we demonstrated that in a closed hearing, that became very compelling, because infrasound technologies had been spoken about in the open literature. In fact, even the Strategic Studies Institute in London had discussed the uses of these technologies, yet there were no policy guidelines. There was no real discussion politically about the ramifications of the technology. And when we got finished with the testimony, I was approached by the technical advisor for Santer at the time, who was a president of the European Commission. And he had basically said, look, we're not going to stop until we have a full understanding and begin to pursue this area and the areas related to it, because they believed it was the most invasive type of technology they'd ever heard of. And it wasn't just us talking. We produced the documents that supported the position and the direction of military research through the open literature. And, you know, it should be disconcerting. I mean, if you think about any religious tradition in the world, they all value free will as a fundamental aspect of what we are as human beings. And the idea of someone believing that they have the rationale or ability or justification to override individuals' brains is fundamentally flawed. I mean, ethically, it's just a horrible state for our military to be in.
There are a lot of sick people on this planet. I don't want to minimize that.
Yep.
But there are some people who have committed these horrendous crimes, and they claim that they heard voices and these voices told them to do it. They almost as if they lost control of who they were. Could that be, I mean, is that part of an experiment in some cases?
I believe it is. And let me give you a direct quote. And this this quote is going to come from Aaron Space for the 21st Century, a document called New World Vistas. And it's a quote out of Earth, Rise, and Revolution. And it says, and I quote, "It would also appear possible to create high-fidelity speech in the human body, raising the possibility of covert suggestion and psychological direction. Thus, it may be possible to talk to selected adversaries in a fashion that would be most disturbing to them," unquote. That's exactly what you're talking about.
It sure is. Elect a Manchurian candidate, isn't it?
Right. Now, this was projected in this particular document. It was projected as something that was going to come in the future. And there was actually an article that was published in April of this year, and it was April 22nd, 2005. It's an AP story originating out of Portland, Oregon, where they actually recognize a guy, Woody Norris, who is an inventor.
I just had Woody on about a month ago.
Well, so you know, I mean, here's a guy that invented hypersonic sound that can literally transfer sound signals, you know, into the head. And in this case, he's using ultrasonics. But the same technology is believed to be possible, the same type of technology in terms of delivery on it can be done through pulsed microwaves.
He could have four different radio stations in a car with four people, and he could beam one station to each person. You know, one person might want talk, the other might want music, the other might want sports and something else. He could beam these four signals directly to the individual, and the other ones won't hear it.
That's right. Now, there was some discussion back a couple of years ago. This hypersonic sound was being played out for vending machine use, where when you go through the when you're walking down the street and you walk in front of the vending machine, if you're within a certain zone, it sends you the the slogan.
Do you want a Snickers or whatever?
Right. And so here you have a technology being, promoted as something for commercial uses. Now, the important thing about that is these commercial uses, when you talk about interference with brain performance in this way, in some situations, I think this one of hypersonic sound maybe doesn't penetrate below the level of consciousness. But what if you send a signal in that is not necessarily consciously perceived? Can you do that? Can you influence behavior without a conscious perception of a signal? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. And this has been demonstrated using neurophonic technology, which was developed as far back as the 1960s.
Is the goal, Nick, here, though, to control millions of people on this planet, perhaps billions of people at one time?
As a goal or as an outcome, from my perspective, that's the outcome. For some, maybe it's an objective. And I think going back to Brzezinski again, what Brzezinski said in Between Two Ages is as these technologies emerged, that no matter who was in power, liberal or conservative, their temptation to utilize the technology to further their political ends would outweigh their good sense to refrain. And I think that says it all. I think the fact is that people who believe that they're doing right, and I don't believe most people in political office or leadership positions get in there and say, okay, how am I going to screw things up today? They go in and they believe that they're doing the right thing on whatever values platform that they exist on. And the idea of maybe making it work a little faster, work a little smoother, the temptation is there. And that's where I think the flaw is human nature being what it is, we're going to make the mistakes. And I think we already have in this country on several levels. There is a multitude of victims of experiments of all different kinds, including these, and yet no one's ever gone to trial for that. Who's in jail for that? Who's in jail for victimizing 500,000 Americans in this country?
Nobody, and somebody should be.
And that's exactly right. And the idea that technologies today, and we talked a lot about different technologies on the program over the years, and we've got technologies that don't just affect individual humans, but can affect, things on a very grand scale. And when you have that capacity, then the responsibilities that go with it have a whole lot more to do with disclosure and openness than they do with running things in smoke-filled rooms at the Pentagon. And I think that's where the European Parliament, when they weighed in on this issue, they weighed in on it. And it was just after, if you remember back during the late 90s, there was that event in Japan where 700 kids have gone to the hospital with epileptic seizures.
They're looking at a video game or
right. They're watching a cartoon.
Yeah, exactly.
And what everyone believed up until then, in terms of the mass of the population, was that sitting in front of your television set, 10 or 15 feet away, was just fine. And yet, here was a signal, a flickering light at a very specific flicker rate that the brain locked onto, and it caused those epileptic seizures in 700 kids, and it wasn't a great deal of energy. And this is a very important element here. When you talk about global systems, you know, everyone wants to talk about how much power it takes. Well, it's not about the volume of power. It's about the frequency and the way in which the energy is manipulated that is the most important. And if you look at the work of Delgado at Yale University, and Delgado, just to give people a little background for those that don't, He came over from Madrid, Spain. He had gotten his degree in electrophysiology from the University of Madrid in 1950. He came over to the to Yale University and began mapping the human brain to figure out which parts were responsible for what activities. And he wrote a book called Towards a Psycho-Civilized Society. It was published in 1969. And when you look at this book, it's really about this attitude that, you know, what if we could do all these things and make people feel good? Wouldn't that be a great thing? And it's that kind of attitude that permeates his writing. Now, what happened later in the mid-80s is he found out, and back in 69, let me go back, he had a example that he gave in the book, and it was several images of a charging bull, and maybe you remember this, where he flips a switch and a radio transmitter goes off and the bull stops right in front of him, doesn't attack him. And in this case, he used implanted technology. Well, by 1985, he had figured out that using pulsed radio frequency signals at 1/50th of what the Earth generates, which is a very, very small amount of energy. By comparison, the amount of energy around us in the radio frequency regime is like 200 million times more than the Earth produces. So 1/50th of what the Earth produces is a grain of sand on the beach, and yet that energy is sufficient to override brain activity and change emotional states when it's directed at individuals or groups of individuals. And he did this without any implants or physical contact with the subjects at all. And that's how far the technology advanced up until the mid-80s, which is now 20 years old.
Well, when you say some of this started during a little after the Korean War, maybe even during, who concocted this?
Well, you know, I mean, the idea of the body being something more than a bunch of chemicals, that it's more regulated by electromagnetic fields and bioenergetic fields, goes back into the 20s and 30s, you know, when they were using dithermia units for cancer treatment. The Rife devices were developed in the 30s. I believe that was the 30s. There was a lot of interest pre-World War II looking at electromagnetic energy for healing purposes. You can even go back to when they were looking at a muscle in frogs back in the 1700s, when they electrified dead animals to see what would happen with them. You know, you go back so far back, and yet you come up to World War II, and then what happened at World War II? World War II took place, and these kind of models sort of went away, and they were replaced by chemical models, and the pharmaceutical industry emerged as a very powerful force. Coming out of the war, these models were forgotten and replaced by chemical models for the human body that just in the last couple of decades have started to drift back towards now what people are talking about, electrochemical models, which is still only halfway back to where we ought to be, because every chemical reaction underlying it is an energy exchange, is an energy interaction.
Some people believe that fluoride in water is contributing to some form of mind control.
Yeah, and you know this comes out through through literature regarding fluoridation in terms of what it does to suggestibility. That's been said for a long, long time. You know, there's the thing that I would say is the technology today is so sophisticated, you don't need chemical agents to augment the effects. You don't need the kinds of things, implant technology.
That's low-tech stuff now.
Yeah, that would be considered low-tech. Now, implant technologies has other advantages, you know, in terms of local control of an individual, tracking purposes, you know, the kinds of things that now are in the open literature. You know, 5-6 years ago, we were talking about some of this, and people would look at you know, pre-9/11, like you were out of your mind. Today, in post-9/11, I think people have started to look at it because there's a little more open discussion. You know, a lot of the discussion about the mind control issues actually emerges out of the former Soviet Union, where they're a little more free to speak. In fact, even during the undercurrent segment that I'd referenced earlier, there was a couple of the Morrises who had done work during the Reagan-Bush era on non-lethal weapons. And what they had said is they couldn't talk about anything they had done in the United States. They could only talk about what they had observed in Russia and the former Soviet Union.
What's their motivation, Nick? What do they want?
Ultimately, it is about control. I mean, the idea of pacifying crowds. I mean, think about what we're dealing with in Iraq right now. And this is where I think we're going to start to hear a lot more about it
Let's talk about that when we come back, right at the top of the hour with our special guest tonight, Nick Begich. And yes, later on, you can talk with him too.